Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Attitudes towards and about the gay community are changing rapidly. At the ballot box this fall, voters in Maine, Maryland, and Washington voted to support same-sex marriage. Many organizations have anti-discrimination policies that include language regarding sexual orientation. Younger people seem more inclusive than previous generations when it comes to sexuality. And yet, there are still people in the gay community who feel they are not fully a part of the wider community around them, and there are those in that wider world who are not ready to accept gay people as full citizens. Today on the program, we will hear the findings of a recent survey designed to give voice to the downstate Illinois LGBT experience. It's an update to a similar survey from the year 2000, and it suggests the climate has changed in a number of ways, from more supportive issues surrounding gay rights to fewer workplace complications to a general sense of tolerance of one another, regardless of sexuality. But it also finds that downstate Illinois, while more tolerant, is maybe not necessarily outwardly supportive of the gay community, or at least in the eyes of the respondents to the survey, there is room for improvement. Joining us to talk about this survey and its social and political implications are three guests. Dr. Ramona Faith Oswald is a professor of family studies and director of the graduate program in the Department of Human and Community Development at the University of Illinois, and she is the primary author of Rainbow Illinois. It's the survey examining how downstate LGBT communities have changed between 2000 and 2011. Dr. Oswald, welcome to Focus.
Thank you very much for having me.
Glad to have you with us. Also with us is Kevin Bowersox Johnson. He's president of the UP Center of Champaign County. It's a community center serving the LGBT community. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Kathy Spiegel is a gay rights advocate from Champaign who joins us today by phone. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
As always, we welcome you to the conversation as well. In what ways, positive or negative, do you feel attitudes towards and about the gay community have changed in downstate Illinois over the last 10 or 12 years? How does downstate Illinois compare to other communities? You can call in with your questions or comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can post comments on Facebook at Will Radio TV Online, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. Ramona, let's talk about the Rainbow Illinois survey and the most recent iteration of this 2011 edition. Who participated in it? When did you conduct it? What did you ask? And what were some of the findings?
Sure. This survey was conducted in late 2010 and then through the winter and spring of 2011. We intentionally closed data collection the day before civil unions were enacted so that 10 years from now we can possibly do another version that can track the impact of more legislation on the community. The methodology, the way that we collected data, the people from whom we collected it, was very similar to the survey that was done in 2000, but this time it was a web-based survey, and links to the survey were sent out through every known organization in the downstate region, as well as every social network, personal opportunity possible. People passed on the word, and we had close to 500 respondents from across more than 35 counties in the downstate region. Most of those counties were the same as the counties of people who responded in 2000, but there were some new areas that were covered. And I think it's important to understand that the methodology was the same, the region that was studied was the same, but we're not tracking individuals over these 10 years.
So this it's designed to be a reasonable statistical sampling of the community.
I would not call it statistical sampling. It is non-representative sampling.
Okay.
Because we don't know where people are or how to reach them in a way that would allow us to do random selection.
Okay.
And so it shouldn't be taken as representative of a population. It should be taken as generalizable to the people who responded. And I can speak to that if people have questions.
Okay,
about
but how about so, it's a snapshot of the moment.
It is a very compelling snapshot, and it is valid for the people who responded.
What were some of the questions that you asked?
We asked a wide range of questions: demographics. We asked about religion. We asked about workplace, victimization experiences, family relationships. We asked what's the best thing in your life, what's the worst thing in your life, what would improve your life. We asked about people's attachment to where they live. We asked about their attachment to the gay community, involvement in the gay community. We asked about parenting issues. So a wide range of issues were covered. And some of the key findings that we have noted changes across from 2000 to 2011. In the current survey, there are fewer people who report being victimized as LGBT people. And there are fewer reports of things that happen. Of those who did have things that they experienced them less frequently. And they were less likely to experience them in the workplace. It appears that some of the workplace victimization that we found in 2000 has shifted over to strangers perpetrating those acts. And when I talk about victimization, I'm talking about acts that range from overhearing anti-gay comments, being shunned, being teased, but also more violent or physical acts like being physically threatened or attacked, having your property vandalized, being followed in a threatening manner. And each of those types of victimization, the reports decreased, and that's very good news. Another key finding and very good news is that people were more likely to say that where they lived was supportive and less likely to say that it was hostile. That said, it's still true that most people say where they live is tolerant, and I'd be happy to talk about the difference between those in a moment.
Sure.
People also described where they work as more supportive or more tolerant and less hostile. And I think that may be a reflection of the legislation that's been passed in the last decade, protecting LGBT employees and providing benefits that weren't previously available. Respondents also talked about being more visible at work to their families of origin, to their clergy or their congregations. But that visibility didn't necessarily translate into having more support from those sources. So family of origin conflict may be increased. People talked about the continued need for support and resources, that it's incredibly difficult to maintain resources in a region that is so demographically dispersed in an area that's already not population dense. And so that has continued to be a need that is being expressed. And a new piece in the 2011 survey is that we are now able to look at how people perceive where they live, whether they consider it to be supportive, hostile, or tolerant, and connect that to indicators of distress or well-being. And on every indicator of distress or well-being, we're finding patterns that if you live in a hostile place, you have a lot of distress and not much well-being. If you live in a tolerant place, it's better. But if you live in a place that you consider to be supportive of you, you are doing better than folks in the other two environments. And right. I think that's important.
So let's talk about that distinction between tolerance and support. What do you mean?
Tolerance is sort of a don't ask, don't tell kind of environment or attitude where it's, you know, I accept you or I recognize you as LGBT, but please don't make a big deal out of it. Don't bring it up. I won't bring it up. It's all okay. It's all good. But it shouldn't be openly discussed or sort of affirmed in a positive way. Support is where somebody feels that where they live, they can be out. It can be known that they're LGBT. They can place high importance on that identity. They can place low importance on that identity. But it's recognized and comfortable, and they don't feel that who they are is being silenced in order to gain recognition or support.
Let me bring Kevin and Kathy in at this point, and I'll start with you, Kevin. Would you agree with the notion that the climate in downstate Illinois is more tolerant today but could be still more supportive of the gay community?
Absolutely. As a person who goes out to the community and also serves the community in a capacity at a community center serving the LGBT community, I have, you know, for example, spoken in classrooms, elementary, middle school, and high school for the last 15 years. And when I moved back to this area after living in the California area for several years, about 10 years ago, I was getting questions at the high school level that were really more less profound questions, more about stereotypes, you know, questions that were very inappropriate. You know, which one of you in your relationship plays the woman, a question that we just find to be completely inappropriate to be asked. To now, 10 years later, when I go and speak into a high school classroom, they know that my partner and I have a child, and questions like, how do civil unions impact your adoption? How did you go through the adoption process? The questions are much more profound and much more related to everyday life and what life is like in this town. So for me, that shows dramatically some changes. But on the other end of the spectrum, on the other side of that coin, is I also work inside the center where people are coming to us of all ages that are being bullied in school or coming out later in life where their family has disowned them and they need a place to go.
Hmm. Kathy, how about you? What's your reaction to what you're hearing about this idea that maybe the climate in downstate Illinois is more tolerant today but could be still more supportive?
I have to agree with Kevin. I participated in Ramona's survey when she did the first one, and I don't know that I did the second one, but I know some attitudes have changed. I also know that people are more careful about what they say if they understand that you are a part of that community, so they are at least aware, if not supportive.
Can you think of any examples in your own life?
Well, I know when I came out late in life, so I was in my 50s, and I understood from the very beginning that I needed to be very quiet. But the word got out anyway, and I lost my job. I did not realize that at the time, Champaign had already put in a non-discrimination clause into their city ordinance. When my partner was let go because of discrimination, we actually were able to use Urbana's ordinance, and she won her seat. So just in that, and after the 6 years difference, I became more aware of what was available, and we were able to get the kind of support from the community, the larger community that we really needed. So that's one example.
Let me start with Dr. Oswald on this, but ask all of you, how is the life of a same-sex couple in downstate Illinois different today than when the first Rainbow Illinois survey was conducted in 2000?
I think they're more visible to others. They're more open and out about their relationship and who they are. It's still true that LGBT people who have kids tend to have those kids in heterosexual relationships, and that most parenting families, LGBT families in downstate, are sort of complicated stepfamily relationships. But having said that, it is true that those couples are much more likely to be raising kids as a couple and even bringing kids into that relationship as a couple. They're much more likely to be known to the schools and other doctors, other community institutions as families. They're, you know, now have access to civil unions, but even before that, they may have had some kind of commitment ceremony, either in a religious institution or not. But mostly I would say that they are more visible and more perhaps expectant that they will be accepted and treated with equality and respect.
Kevin?
Yeah, I think for me, being in a same-sex relationship where we adopted together would have never happened had change never occurred. I would have never been in a long-term relationship or even if so, a closeted one at best, if climate change hadn't happened at some level. And I think this speaks to the fact that family issues in coupling and that really have to do with personal coming out process and where you are in your own self-acceptance, which I believe is directly impacted by how you're treated, supported by your family, your community, your church, your school. So for me, had those changes not occurred, I may be in a long-term relationship, but not one where a child is a part of that relationship, and definitely not one that I'm open in the community about.
Ramona?
Can I say something? Yes. I think it's important to point out that about half of the Rainbow Illinois respondents are sort of born and bred in downstate Illinois and continue to have family ties in this region. And so I think an important point to make is that, you know, something that may be different now is that their parents, their siblings, their grandparents, their cousins, their aunts, their uncles are also dealing with these issues in perhaps a more open way in these communities.
An example of that is our family. My son is sixth generation on both my mom and dad's side in this town where we live. And so, you know, we are surrounded by family, friends, cousins, aunts, uncles, grandparents, and those connections and the support or lack of support with those connections really shape the direction in which I decided to either stay in this town, not stay in this town, have a family, share that family with my extended family, et cetera.
Kathy, how about you? How has life changed between 2000 and certainly the most recent surveys from 2011, but today in 2013?
One of the things I learned, at least for me, and this isn't true for everyone, is that I don't hide my sexuality from anyone. I'm very open about it. And then that really clues me in very quickly as to whether people are going to accept me or not. All of our grandchildren, we have 16 grandchildren between the two of us. All of our grandchildren know about it. They know that we're their lesbian grandmothers. The schools know. Our children are very open and accepting. And I find that I guess I couldn't live any other way but to have it be that way. There are members, extended members of my partner's family who are not very accepting, but they're not hostile. We just know that that's not part of their value system, but we still meet with them. So it's okay.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing the findings of the most recent Rainbow Illinois survey and its implications, social and political and beyond, for the gay community in downstate Illinois, and how gay people perceive the downstate communities they are a part of. My guests are Ramona Faith Oswald, one of the authors, the primary author of a report outlining the findings of that survey, Kevin Bowersox-Johnson, president of the UP Center of Champaign County, that's a community center serving the LGBT community, and Champaign-based gay rights advocate Kathy Spiegel. We welcome your questions and comments for our guests at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. You can also email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone numbers again, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. We have this question. Email came in asking, external heterosexism and lack of affirmation by family and society are three stressors for LGBT people. What role does internalized homophobia, a form of self-oppression, play in people's lives? When do you come out? Is it a continual process? What responsibility do LGBT people have in changing the climate for us all?
That's a great question. I think that there's a very strong connection between internalized homophobia and the context in which you live and identify with. The identify with is important. So if you're not a religious person, religious hatred or bigotry against gay people isn't going to affect you as much as somebody who is religious. So I think how you identify yourself and where you position yourself in the world, if the things that are close to you and important to you are reflecting a positive image of yourself to you, then you are able to internalize that and sustain that. But if that world around you is sending messages of disregard, of disdain, of outright hatred or even violence, it can be very difficult to maintain a positive sense of self as an LGBT person or as anybody, frankly, in that kind of situation. And so I think it's really important to recognize that people hiding themselves as LGBT may be part of this internalized stigma that is related to external stigma. I also think it's important to recognize, though, that some people place greater importance on their identity than others. And so for some people, being out and open might simply be more important than to other people. And that there also are some very real decisions that people make about how out they are going to be in particular contexts, and that those decisions should be respected. sometimes it makes sense not to be out. Sometimes it makes sense to really push the envelope and be there, and that people have good reasons for making those decisions, and that that isn't necessarily reflective of their own internalized stigma.
I wonder if that's another distinction between now and going back to the year 2000 or even, you know, the generation preceding that or earlier, this idea of there's a little more of an understanding of context to the concept of being out.
Yes.
And circumstances under which some people may wish to do that or not wish to do that.
Yes.
Do you get a sense based off of the survey or just in general terms that the society at large has a better understanding of that depth?
Of that depth that, of that context is that, influencing?
Yes.
Yes, I think so, because I think that there are allies who intentionally express their support for gay issues to make it comfortable for people to be out, to kind of send that message so that people can make decisions, you know, knowing that they're going to get support if they do that.
You also raised religion, and among the findings in the survey is a need for more resources for parents and children, for older adults, employment support, youth community activities, a number of things that traditionally some people would turn to churches to provide. I imagine that there are plenty of gay people, LGBT folks in Central Illinois and downstate Illinois who are also religious, who have specific religious needs. Do you have a perception that there is still an opinion, a stigma, or whatever you want to call it, that they can't really reach out to their local church, or they don't know who to reach out to fulfill that spiritual religious need?
I think that churches are incredibly important in the downstate region, including for LGBT people and their loved ones, and that the role of open and affirming congregations is just, I cannot express how important that is for people, because Rainbow Illinois respondents are highly religious people. Parents, I think about half of the parents with younger kids say that their children are receiving formal religious instruction. People go to church. They identify with particular denominations. They pray. They have a relationship with a higher power that is extremely valuable to them, and they are able to reconcile, if needed, a sense of themselves as LGBT and any kind of negative religious messages that they may receive. There are stories in the open-ended comments. There are a number of people who talked about their search for open and affirming congregations, and one person, you know, wrote that he drives 160 miles round trip every weekend just to go to church. And I think that speaks to the value of religious contexts where people can be out and feel really supportive.
I'm curious what both Kevin and Kathy think about this particular issue. Let me start with Kathy. Kathy?
Yes, I know it's important. I was a member of a congregation in a former community that I lived in this area, and the pastor had made several comments that I thought were inappropriate, and I approached him individually, and he told me he had no intentions of changing how he addressed homosexuality, and I had to leave the congregation. And I left very noisily because I wanted the other members of the congregation to understand why I was leaving. For a long time, I did not approach any kind of church. Now in Champaign, I found a church that is open and welcoming and extremely supportive. And it's such a pleasure just to even be able to walk into that building and be able to breathe easily and know that as long as I'm there, I'm safe, and that I know that everybody else that's there. I mean, when we had our Holy Union several years ago, we invited the church community to participate because those people are important to us. And it's important that we have things like couples with children who go to Sunday school, and it is a wonderful church family that's supportive, and I know it's important to many of us.
Kevin, are there connections that could yet be made between churches and the gay community that maybe have not been within downstate Illinois?
I would say with downstate Illinois, yes. Central Illinois, right here in the CU area, we're really fortunate to have the connection of about five open and affirming churches who perform ceremonies within their walls, We have members of our community attending their church. So, you know, we're pretty fortunate in this area in some regards. I also find, though, that religious identity is one of the most important to people in the coming out process often. It's the one that they often struggle with the most because of how they've been told all their life that this is wrong, they're going to hell. They have these images of, you know, what they're going to spend the rest of their, you know, life as and in the light, in the eyes of God, et cetera. And it's one of the hardest ones for them to get over. And it's one of the ones that does the most personal damage to individuals and long-term damage. I'm really fortunate to have great connections with churches in this area. We still have churches that do make it difficult for members of the LGBT community to attend openly. And, you know, for me, we have tried to start programs within the community center that focus on evaluating your relationship with God and its impact on your sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. And we find that we do get some attendance, but we find that we have a few churches in the area doing a great job and that people would rather have those discussions in the context of a church because that is what that tradition means a lot to them.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we are discussing the climate in which the gay community lives in downstate Illinois, how it's changed over the years, and the challenges the LGBT community faces, as indicated in a recent survey. Our guests are Kevin Bowersox-Johnson, president of the UP Center of Champaign County, a Champaign-based gay rights advocate, Kathy Spiegel, and Ramona Faith Oswald, professor of family studies at the University of Illinois, who is the primary author of a report comparing the results of the Rainbow Illinois surveys conducted in 2000 and again in 2011. By the way, there is a link to the findings of the survey from the year 2000 on our website. We're discussing the results, of course, from the 2011 survey today. To join our conversation, you can call us this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, and we welcome questions and comments on WILL's Facebook and Twitter pages. We're on Facebook at Will Radio TV Online. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media, and we'll talk more after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, David Nassau talks about his biography of Joseph Kennedy, the patriarch. Even after his sons, Jack and Bobby, were president and attorney general, they still turned to their influential father. During the Bay of Pigs crisis, the brothers were in the Oval Office.
And Bobby says to Jack, "Let's call Dad. He'll make us feel better."
Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we are discussing attitudes towards and about the gay community in downstate Illinois on today's program and the findings of a recent survey designed to give voice to the downstate Illinois LGBT experience. It's an update to a similar survey from the year 2000, and it suggests that the climate has changed in a number of ways, from more support of issues surrounding gay rights to fewer workplace complications to a general sense of tolerance of one another regardless of sexuality. But it also finds that downstate Illinois, while more tolerant, is not necessarily outwardly more supportive of the gay community, or at least in the eyes of the respondents to the survey, there may be some room for improvement. My guests are Ramona Faith Oswald, one of the authors of a report outlining the findings of the survey, Kevin Bowersox-Johnson, president of the UP Center of Champaign County, and Champaign-based gay rights advocate Kathy Spiegel is joining us as well. And again, we welcome your questions and comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. So let's talk about some of the other findings from the survey, some of the other implications of the 2011 survey. Among them, you had more female respondents to the survey, and I understand that reflects that there are more female couple households in downstate Illinois, while there are more male couple households in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
That is true. I think there's three explanations for that. One is that there is a very organized, vibrant, visible gay community in Chicago that is more male than female identified. So there may be more of a pull, for example, to Chicago. female couples are more likely to have children, and same-sex couples with kids are more likely to live outside of big cities in non-metropolitan areas. That's true nationwide, and frankly, that's true across sexual orientations. It's not unique to same-sex couples. And then I think there's a history in central Illinois in particular of feminism and women's communities, lesbian communities, that goes back to the 1970s, that has a lot to do with women being here, feeling comfortable being here, and sort of creating a culture to which folks can come in and build their lives on. So, for example, the first women's music festival was in Bloomington in the early 70s. You know, Champaign-Urbana were both the first municipalities to have human rights protection at the municipal level in 1977 and 1978. You know, there was a lot of activism here that I think people may not know about or forget about, but it has set a tone, perhaps, where people feel welcomed.
Does that so is it too crazy a generalization to make to say, well, there are just more lesbians here than there are gay men? Or is there any way to really get a sense of that? Or is it just because that history exists, there's more of a sense of outward expression from that part of the community?
I don't know. But Gary Gates, who is the demographer who's done tremendous amount of analyses using census data on same-sex couples, you know, his analyses show that there are more female couples in downstate. And, you know, assuming that also is a similar pattern for folks that aren't in relationships or who are not cohabitating, then, yeah, I think you could say there are more lesbians than gay men.
You also note in your survey findings a significant increase in LGBT people with multiracial identities. Mm-hmm. Is that also reflective of Illinois and the nation as a whole, or is that something that maybe is specific to downstate Illinois?
I think it's reflective of overall trends.
Okay. Another interesting finding in your survey is that annual income among respondents was significantly lower in 2011 than it was in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
To what do you attribute that?
I think the recession and the economic trends that are affecting all individuals and families in this country. For full-time workers, income has remained flat. And there's been a rise of part-time employment, and the part-time wages are much lower this time compared to 10 years ago. And so I think it's important to recognize that LGBT people are influenced by the same economic trends that everybody else is. They're not immune to it. They're not outside of it.
Now, another element of this survey is, and it's sort of trying to get a sense of what the experience is for gay people in downstate Illinois. And when we say downstate, that encompasses a lot of different communities and a lot of different variables.
Yes.
Can we make distinctions either from this survey or from other resources about what the experience is like for gay people in rural areas versus urban areas?
I think in rural areas, there are far fewer resources. People are more likely to be living in poverty. They are more likely to have family connections, to be in those very rural areas for sort of family ties, personal history ties. They may lack access to open and affirming communities. They may not have any access to any gay support in an organized fashion. They may be very attached to networks of friends that are LGBT or LGBT affirming. But in rural areas, you're really living outside of any kind of organized gay community. And the consequences of being out are a lot greater. And it may be in positive ways, it may be in negative ways. But when you live in a rural community, you know, anonymity is not possible. And especially if your family is also there. And so the decisions that you make about how you negotiate everyday life as an LGBT person are different when you don't have the luxury of kind of deciding who you're going to be personal with and who you're not.
Kevin, Ramona cites the fact that there are maybe in rural areas fewer resources for the LGBT community within those areas. But you noted earlier for Champaign-Urbana, there seemed to be a lot of resources. Maybe more than typical. Of course, Champaign-Urbana, in this context, we wouldn't characterize as rural.
Right.
But it's certainly, compared to Chicago, it might be.
I think the number of resources that we have right now are growing, which I'm really excited about. You know, the number of open and affirming churches is growing. We have the LGBT Resource Center here on campus. Being a university town really helps. However, the Up Center was started because oftentimes there is a distinction between those that are associated with the university and those that are not. And those that are not associated with the university will not reach out to university resources, even if they're available to them, to the general community. So, which is why the Up Center was started, to bridge that gap.
Let me ask, what sort of services do you provide at the Up Center?
The Up Center provides right now of approximately, 10 support/social groups for adults and youth alike. So we have a youth support group that meets weekly. We have a women's group, a men's group, a group for supporting members of the transgender community, a group provided for supporting members of the bisexual community. We have a book club and a few others that are on our website,
group.
A families group for those that have children. So we have a variety of support and social groups. We offer 4 major events a year, which includes a kind of fancy dinner near the Valentine's Day time, a variety show in April, a film festival. We've had 3 film festivals thus far, and last year we had our 3rd annual Pride Festival, which brings in upwards of 3,000 people to the area. So the Up Center is there to provide support, and I think Centerlink, which is an organization that supports community centers, specifically LGBT community centers across the nation, supports Ramona's research in their own study that they did in regards to people deciding to move or not to move to an area based on the resources available to them. And just the number of calls I get every year at the time of recruitment at the U of I or job changes or, you know, people getting ready to start doctorate programs or whatever that call me and ask me to do the tour of the town, ask me questions about how friendly the community is to the LGBT community, et cetera, really does, you know, provide proof that these resources do matter to people when making life decisions such as moving to an area or staying in an area.
I want you all to think about what's missing, what resources don't yet exist or don't exist as vibrantly as they should. And we'll come back to that. But we do have some folks waiting on the line. So I want to take some calls. We'll go first to Shirley in Charleston. Hi, Shirley.
Hi. I have a student, a really interesting topic. I have a student, an undergraduate student, who's working on an honors thesis, which concerns the construction and interpretation of sexual orientation. And I'd like to hook him up, so I'd like to know where we can get a copy of the report. He has 570 surveys from the EIU campus, which is, I mean, it's a tremendous amount of data for an undergraduate thesis. I'm sure he'd like to take a look at your findings, and you might want to look at his also, because it's actually pretty interesting. So I was wondering where we could get a copy of the report, where he could get a hold of you, any of you?
I would be delighted to talk to your student and to email with him. Why don't you have him email me at ROSWALD@illinois.edu. And I will respond. I will share resources. I would be delighted to talk to him. I think his project is terrific.
It is. It's really interesting. That's terrific. I'll have him do that. And the second thing is, here on the Eastern Campus, I've had a major issue with Chick-fil-A, because we have actually a Chick-fil-A venue in our food court. And people from the surrounding community came last summer when the owner, president, said all those things. They actually, people from our surrounding community around here came onto Eastern's campus. We were out of classes, but ate at Chick-fil-A in support of all that stuff. And we're actually doing a panel on our efforts to try to address those concerns at the Central States Communication Association Conference in April. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that, and also I would love to further explore your ideas about the whole Chick-fil-A thing. Again, the issue was because we have a venue on campus. We're not saying what people can or can't do off campus,
right.
But this is a campus that does claim time to, and I believe does, embrace diversity.
I think it's important to first understand the legal context that Chick-fil-A is doing business in Illinois, that Illinois has statewide protection for sexual orientation in terms of employment, and that it's really a good idea, I think, to start with examining, okay, there's Chick-fil-A on campus. Okay, the owner has these attitudes and beliefs, and people are coming to show their support. But what are their employee policies? Are they in line with state law? I mean, start with, are they following the letter of the law, if they're not following the spirit of the law? I think that's a good place to have a conversation, because you can hold people accountable to whether or not they're fulfilling their obligations under the law.
Along that same lines is to check with the university policies as well in regards to most likely their contract for their venue space that they're in is through the university itself, and making sure that they're following those policies as well.
Let's go next to Daryl in Bloomington. Hi, Daryl.
Hello. I have a comment about trying to affirm same-sex issues in schools. As I watch areas of the country trying to be more affirming, I see some places that are trying to introduce examples of same-sex families in preschool and early grade instruction. In Massachusetts, they've experimented with dropping the terms mother and father in schools in favor of partners. And then, of course, there's the effort to include same-sex education as a part of basic sex education in schools. And it's these type of efforts that, to me, antagonize those of us that are trying to be tolerant. And is this really necessary or part of getting along?
All right. Thanks for the comment and question.
I think that's a great question, and I'd like to answer it in a couple of different ways. And one is to say that even when adults are uncomfortable with an issue or an idea or something that's just out there in the world, that doesn't mean that kids are uncomfortable or find it problematic. And so, you know, I am a lesbian with the same-sex partner. We have two children, and our children and everybody in our lives has known that fact from before birth on. And so to assume that it's a problem for kids that they can't handle that information, I think, is incorrect. I think the challenge is being appropriate to the child's age and to acknowledge that families may have different values about these issues. Another thing that I would like to say in my answer, though, is that there are folks who research the experiences of kids with LGBT parents, particularly around school, and looking at the issue of what buffers the negative effects of those kids being hassled or harassed or otherwise mistreated at school by people who don't like the fact that they come from gay or lesbian families. And there are three protective factors that have been found. And one is that it's really important for kids with gay and lesbian parents to have contact with other families with similar situations. It's very important for their parents to be involved in the gay community. And the third one, and perhaps the most challenging, as you point out, is that it's beneficial for these kids to attend a school that does have the open acknowledgement of LGBT issues in their curriculum or in their school activities. And it promotes the psychological health of children to have a socially inclusive environment. That doesn't mean that everybody has to like it or agree, but having factual information about what's going on in the lives of the people in that community does a tremendous job in terms of creating support for children.
And I'd like to add that, because I completely agree, and I think this is a great question, and I think one of the biggest responses or one of the biggest points that I'd like to make is respect. In regards to, like, what I heard and is that, you know, this example was that they're changing language throughout. And I'm a proponent of changing language, for example, on forms. When I filled out forms for my son to go to school, all of the forms said mother and father, mm-hmm. which, you know, yeah. constantly indicates to him that he's living in an environment that's not accepted in general society. And, you know, he's five. He was born into this situation. This is his life, and he knows nothing other. However, when it comes to verbal language, I think it's really important that we respect everyone's identity and how they identify their parents, whether they use the word dad or mom or grandma or noni or all these other. So I think there's a balance to be had here. I think what it is, though, is it's a balance of respect, and that respect has to acknowledge that kids go home to same-sex parents, or that kids start to come out as early as 11 to 14 years of age and are engaging in relationships at those ages, and they need to be educated across the board. And they may not be getting that education if they're not out in a one-on-one setting. So therefore, incorporating something that is being told to everybody else in a manner that, you know, takes a quick side note to include them, I think is really an important piece that we need to acknowledge in our schools.
Kathy Spiegel, anything to add?
Well, I was thinking of an experience that my grandson had when he was six, and he was, again, in a community not here, but in rural Illinois, and his teacher was talking about lesbians and how evil that is, and he, knowing no better, stood up and said, wait a minute, my grandma's a lesbian, she's not a nasty person. Young children very quickly figure out when terminology is used, whether it's non-inclusive or exclusive, how that relates to their family situation, and they will either feel shamed and not talk about it, or they speak out of their own beautiful childish, you know, not barring the consequences. So this has been going on for a long time, and I hate when language is exclusive by virtue of naming only mom and dad, or going to the hospital and only being able to talk about whether you're married. You can't talk about whether you're partnered, or when we ask people and force them into boxes, regardless, it's hurtful.
Let's take another call. I want to try and get one more call. Micah is in Champaign. Micah, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, and I want to say hi to Kevin, too, who I know personally.
Hey,
the main
Micah.
Reason I'm calling, we are a family of a transgender child, and I just want to say, you talk about resources and what's missing in this community. What I want to say is what this community does have, I'm sure you've been talking about, but I cannot stress how important UpCenter has been to our family. They've made the process as less stressful, and they've been so understanding and helpful in coming to our school and helping us in any way possible, and that if it wasn't for the UpCenter in this community, we would be lost as a family. And I consider us very educated as parents for this child, that we knew what to do, but without the UpCenter, I can't even tell you how important the UpCenter is to this community. I know I've already said it, but I just want to stress how important it is and hope that people understand that it is a resource that's here, people can use it, and that Kevin has been nothing but the most helpful to us, our family, and to our community. So I just want to thank Kevin for that.
All right. Thanks for the call. That sort of transitions us back to that question of, if there are some great resources here, there are probably some things that are still missing within Champaign-Urbana or downstate Illinois as a whole. And I wanted to ask each of you, you know, what are some things that you think are still missing? Let me start with you, Kevin.
Well, one of the things that we're very open about as a board of directors for the UpCenter and staff at the UpCenter is that we do have a lack of resources for people of color that identify as LGBT and the transgender community. We are working so hard to bridge that gap, but it's not an easy one. The more micro-focused you get in your support to a community, the more difficult it is to provide resources, because you are trying to provide to maybe a smaller community. You're trying to find days and times that people are available to all meet at the same time. There's so many variables, money, rent, mm-hmm. for space, all these different variables. But we are working to bridge those gaps, and I think those are two major ones that are on our immediate radar to focus on. And we have recently started a social support group for members of the transgender community, and a group called Blend Up, which is a group for people of color who also identify as LGBT.
Kathy Spiegel, what do you think is missing?
I still think that there are, in our schools, but there are very few schools where it is safe for students to be out or to look for support. Here we're very fortunate within the city itself that we have these the support groups within the schools, but you don't have to go very far out of this community to understand that the administration is not supportive. There has been a couple of lawsuits filed for schools to allow those kind of ally and support groups. So as you get further away from the community, from the larger community, you see fewer and fewer of those supports. So children don't have the opportunities to get that kind of help that they need.
We have just about 30 seconds or so left. Ramona Faith Oswald, what do you think is missing?
I agree with what Kevin and Kathy have just said, and I would add that I think we could use more organized supports that are specifically for kids, not necessarily gay or lesbian kids, but kids who have gay or lesbian parents, transgender parents, bisexual parents. That's a difficult thing to sustain, and there have been a number of efforts over the years that, for a variety of reasons, have kind of fizzled. But I think that it's important for children to have a source of support.
Ramona Faith Oswald, Kevin Bowersox Johnson, Kathy Spiegel, thank you all for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
We welcome any additional thoughts you may have about today's program on our website. That's will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, Jim Meadows will be your host. He will talk with Akhil Reed Amar, author of America's Unwritten Constitution, The Precedents and Principles We Live By. Then on Friday, Kimberly Cronick will lead a discussion on home births and midwifery in Illinois. Then I will be back on Monday. Today's program was produced by Lindsay Moon and Travis Stanzel. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. Kyle Mabry is our technical director. He handled your calls today. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks so much for joining us.